broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Only know my car could have 16.
He said it was a big piece of tape.
You are so sweet.
A strong person, a fighter. I mean, she is a fighter like...
My name is Roger Ebert. I love the Phil Hendry Show.
It was ugly.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And online at philhendryshow.com, a reality show that's too much reality for some people. Anyway, we go places where the talk shows wish they could, but they can't, and they don't, so they just don't even try. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445, or if you'd like, Phil. And tonight on our show, we've got a lot of stuff coming up in just a moment. Don Mix is going to be joining us. Steve Bozell, who is a construction contractor from Corona, California, with a daughter at CK Corona Middle School, a wife and a son. He's going to be talking with us about the new TV show on MTV called Skins. I think it's called Skins, and it's Skins, it's plural, and it has some people upset because it represents itself as a show that follows the lives of underage teens. Well, when I say underage, I'm talking about not of majority age. So these are technically kids under the age of 18, and their lives, which does include some sexual activity, and some people consider that to be technically kiddie porn, not kiddie as in babies, but these are underage children engaged in that. So we're going to talk with them. We have Don Mixa from the University of Washington with us here in just a moment. And we're going to talk about Kick a Jew Day and what that has morphed into on some of the nation's campuses. I don't know whether or not you saw the story, but there's another problem with this so-called Kick a Jew Day that they say was inspired by the guys over at South Park because they had a Kick a Ginger Day, redheaded kids. 877-876-PHIL is the number. Keith Olbermann is out at MSNBC. We're going to talk at length about that in our news hour with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman, and we'll show you what other outlets won't say about his ouster. We're going to give you the real story behind the ouster of Keith Olbermann at MSNBC. The uproar over MTV's new show Skins gets louder, as we mentioned. And Don Mixa and Steve Bozell, our affiliate spotlight tonight on WBZT 1230 AM in West Palm Beach, Florida. And our great station in Youngstown, Ohio, WKBN 570 AM. And PhilHendryShow.com online right now, live streaming video of our show. You can watch it. You can love it. You can do whatever you want with it, man. We're online, and also our archives and all of our podcasts and our news feed. And we keep you pretty much up to date on what's happening in this big, wide, wonderful world of ours. 877-876-7445. Joining us here from Seattle, Washington, Don Mixa. And to give a little background here, Don, you're a engineering professor there at the University of Washington, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
I couldn't hear you.
Phil, that is correct, yes.
Okay. And you are you're a respected teacher, I know, on the faculty there. You have a great many students that follow you, not just because of the course you teach, but also politically on campus. Now, across the country, on some high school campuses, we've had something called Kick a Jew Day. It was originally inspired by a bit on South Park where Kick a Ginger Day was talked about on one of these episodes, kicking a redheaded kid.
Yeah, the South Park has the comedy show, and that's my understanding as well.
Now, this was something that was taking place on high school campuses, and we just had another episode of this. What do you think the role of higher education, colleges, can be? Because I know that it's actually taken place on college campuses, and are we really talking here about something that's rather juvenile? But when it begins to elevate itself to the level of college, it becomes a little worse, a little scarier.
Well, I think you're making a little bit of a leap, but let's talk about this in the context of the high school students having this kind of show, event called Kick a Jew Day. I don't think that there's any excuse for it. I think that underage kids that are involved in, for whatever reason, involved in something like that, it's negative and it's going to degrade, I think, the kids' view of themselves and the world around them as a professor at the college level. I treat my students as adults because they are adults, but when you're in high school, of course, you're not an adult, and you do need the correction of adults, and I would like to think the kids are getting that. When we get to the college level, it has more meaning. You can't just look at something called Kick a Jew Day and say, well, you know, this is something that's anti-Semitic. It may have some political import. I know that we have thought of ways to counteract Kick a Jew Day. And
well, what political import does Kick a Jew Day have at the college level that it doesn't have at high school level?
Well, at the high school level, there's really no reason for it. It's just kids being kids, and they saw something on television, and they thought it was funny. At the college level, it takes on a little bit more of a sinister political meaning. There may be certain anti-Semitic groups that want to express a point of view using this kind of humorous or stunt-related kind of event. I had to deal with this as a teacher. And
you now, so we can get to really the meat of the matter, if you will. A young girl by the name of a young woman by the name of Carolyn Draska, was she a student of yours?
No, she's not.
Filed a complaint against you with the administration there at the University of Washington. It was a review because of you kicking her as part of. Now, my understanding was not Kick a Jew Day.
No, it was not Kick a Jew Day. It was Kick a Christian with a K. And that's what she didn't understand. It was Kick a Christian with a K, K-R-I-S-T-A-I-N. And it was Kick a Christian Day. And
so were there students kicking Christians?
There were not at that point. Mine was the first Kick a Christian. And we did this because we were talking, and I was down at the Starbucks with some of the members of my class after class got out late one night, and we were sitting around and talking, how can we answer this, Kick a Jew Day? Does it have these sinister overtones, and are we talking about anti-Semitism? I know that many Jews are atheists, as I am, but I didn't want to make an anti-religious statement, so I simply said to them, what about Kick a Christian?
Now, who are you talking to?
I'm talking to the students.
Okay.
And they said, well, what do you mean, Professor Mixon? I said, well, you could kick a Jew, kick a Christian. And I said, like this lady here walking, and I saw a young woman walking by the Starbucks. And she had a cross. She had a Christian cross around her neck. So I went up behind her, and I kicked her flush in the backside. And I did not kick her with the toe of my shoe. I kicked her with the flat of my shoe, but it was a... you know, it was a comic, a very lighthearted, funny kind of a kick. And I said, kick a Christian. And I turned around and began to walk away. Well, she followed me and asked me why I did that. I said, it's Kick a Christian Day. Now, I wanted to get back to talk to my students and tell them the significance of what I'd done. And she continued to harass me.
Well, now, you had just kicked her, though.
That is correct. But I had also explained to her what I'd done. And I'm a member of the faculty, and I am a professor. And so once I've explained something, I want my students to go off by themselves and to assimilate it and not continue to pepper me with questions.
All right. Our number, by the way, is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. We're talking to Don Mixa here from the University of Washington on Kick a Christian Day, which was in response to Kick a Jew Day there. Did you have a Kick a Jew Day at Washington, at the University of Washington?
Did we have one or didn't?
Well, I mean, were you aware of one taking place?
No, I was not, Phil. What we did, though, is sort of preemptive. I'm sure there was one. There's no question that there had to have been one. And what we did was a preemptive move, which was, well, we'll have a Kick a Christian. And if they have had Kick a Jew, then we will have had our Kick a Christian. But the point is that it was not intended as anything ugly. It was a funny, whimsical way of addressing this idea of kicking a Jew.
Now, all right, so you went up behind this woman, a student there, her name Carolyn Draska, I have her name here, and you kicked her on the backside, on the rear end?
That is right, yes.
And then you turned, when she turned to ask you, I imagine she asked you, why'd you do that?
She
And what did you say?
I said to her that I was a member of the faculty, and I said this is our response to Kick a Christian. And I said that this was how we deal with the Kick a Jew Day. And she said, I don't understand. I don't know why you assaulted me like that. I said, and I told her, I said, don't start talking in language that you and I are both going to regret. I didn't assault you. I kicked you in your butt. You know, I made a joke out of it.
Well, is this appropriate? Let me ask you a question. Is it appropriate for a college professor to engage in this kind of behavior where you physically kick a student?
It is certainly appropriate when you are trying to relate to other students on their level, making a political statement or a religious statement on their level, and you want to do something that is going to engage the student, further ingratiate you with your students, and make sure that socially you continue to interact with your students. And you're not going to be able to do that unless you get onto their level and enjoy life and get with the music and everything that they listen to. And you kick somebody in the, in the butt, if you want. And
all right. Well, so the political purpose of this was what?
Well, there wasn't a political purpose. It was a religious statement. You want to kick a Jew? We kick the Christian in the butt. And again.
Well, you said you were an atheist.
I am an atheist. Yes.
So was this kick a Christian a response to believers?
It might be. It might be. It might not be.
In other words, you didn't have kick an atheist, did you?
No, we did not have kick an atheist because it made more sense to kick a Christian because that would make the Christian know what it was like to be a Jew in the Middle Ages when Christians were persecuting them. But, and again, Christians are in the majority, too. So there's more of them, and they don't know what it's like to be kicked in the butt. So this is what I did. Now, she turned around and said, why'd you do that? I said, well, all I did was I kicked you in the butt. I kicked her in the rear end, and I kicked with the flat of my shoe. I turned, and I walked back, and I talked to my students, and I said, now, that's kick a Christian, and the way to identify them is with a cross. And,
all right, what about this charge of assault?
It is not physical assault because it is not physical assault because I'm a teacher trying to engage a student in a bit of horseplay by kicking them in the butt and making them the object of a joke, of course. But more to the point, trying to educate our students that when you kick a Jew and you're a Christian, well, here's what it feels like to be a Jew when you kick a Christian in the butt. And I said to my students, I think it would be hysterical to see a campus full of kids walking around one day kicking each other in the rear end. I think it would be the funniest thing, and it would be educational.
All right, Don Mixa is our guest here on the Phil Hendry Show from the University of Washington. Kick a Christian today with a K, right?
With a K, that's correct.
Came out of this whole idea of kick a Jew. And you walked up behind a girl, and her name Carolyn Draska, who's gone to the university to complain, and kicked her square in the rear end because she was wearing a Christian cross.
That is right, Phil, and I wish you wouldn't make it sound like I was loading her into a boxcar after a concentration camp.
And no, I'm not. I'm just, she reacted in the way that she felt she was assaulted, and you've been called up before this board because of this. Your response was that a lot of these Christians are uptight?
That is correct.
You still feel that way?
Oh, I do. I think Christians need to understand, it's horseplay, and if you consider what they dished out to Jews for hundreds of years, this is getting kicked between the cheeks of your bottom. That's nothing compared to what the Jews went through, so.
All right, our number is 877-876-7445-877-876-PHIL. So Don Mixa from the University of Washington, and this idea of Kick a Christian Day to replace Kick a Jew Day to the point where you would kick a Christian in the rear end, and that's what he did, and the girl turned around, made a complaint. He's now in front of the university board that reviews the behavior, the activities, or the actions of the professors or the faculty, but he is standing by what he did. as an atheist, as a member of the faculty, and as someone who interacts and wants to continue to interact with the students. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Friday night, we have with us Don Mixa from the University of Washington talking about Kick a Jew Day. This is a ridiculous little antic that was started on high school campuses across the United States in response to some piece of comedy seen on South Park, which is a great show. It's a funny show, and you have to have a little bit of a... Christians, so-called, were kicked that day.
I believe I was the only one to kick one because she immediately went to the board, and I had to. And I said to.
I got a live mic coming down from Medford, so whatever's going on, please. Don, go ahead.
I was going to say I had kicked her, and she turned this into a federal case with the board. So I, whatever fun we were going to have, it suddenly stopped because. I had to go and talk to the university after kicking her, I think, very gently in her butt. And now she's making a big deal out of it. So.
All right. Our number is 877-877-877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. Javier in Miami, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah. I'm an adjunct faculty at a university here in Florida, and I was wondering if Don and the professor, if they would turn around and the students would have a punch yesterday, how well he would like that. Now, guys, just like he did, the student would then explain to you what happened and just simply walk away. That you don't teach a life lesson by advocating violence.
Well, that's not violence. That's kicking someone in the butt. That's not punching someone in the face. That was kicking somebody in the butt. It's comic. I'm sure the gentleman would agree that, kicking someone.
So what's
up
comedy
the butt,
to one? Yeah, but what's comedy to.
from the University of Washington, and he's essentially saying that Kick a Christian Day was in response to the idea of Kick a Jew Day. There's nothing anti-religious about it, but it was also sexual?
It was a way to touch a woman's body without it being overtly sexual, yeah.
877-877-876-7445. Steve Bozell next hour on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
And our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. I guess we had a little bit of a technical problem. We're back on the air here. Don Mixa with me, professor of engineering at the University of Washington. My apologies. And we're getting a lot of questions here. Kick a Jew Day is a high school prank day. I understand. It has overtones of anti-Semitism. I think some of the parents understand. It's juvenile, ignorant kids doing something they don't know the significance of. Would you agree with that?
At the high school level?
At the high school level, yeah.
Oh, I would totally agree with that.
But at the college level, you say it's a little bit more serious?
I think when you get into Kick a Jew Day at the college level, now you're talking about something that has to be addressed and it has to be responded to in not a violent way, but in a direct way. I think you have to let them know where you stand and they know where they stand. And so when I saw this Christian girl, woman, going down the street with the cross around her neck, I went up and I gave her a firm kick in her rear end. Now,
when you say a response, why do you think that this is about kicking Christians?
I think that if you are talking about Kick a Jew Day, I think the first target, if you're going to respond to Kick a Jew Day, the first target obviously would be the Christian. And when I saw this woman with a cross, she had on a long dress. I kicked her as comically as I could. And what do I mean by comically? I kicked her with the flat of my foot between the cheeks of her butt. And I heard laughter coming from the students to my rear and left, to the rear and to the left. And that's when I turned and walked toward them, and she followed me and said something along the lines of, what are you trying to do? And I had made the joke. I said, well, if you see a beautiful woman and you can't really put your hands on her, you can sort of comically kick her butt, and you get a thrill that way or something. Everybody laughed. She didn't laugh. And that's when I had to go talk to the faculty.
So Kick a Christian Day was just you kicking that one woman?
It was just, yeah, it should have been, and I did complain. It should have been more.
877-876-PHIL. Let me go to a phone call in Cincinnati. Jerry, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, Jerry, with Don Mixa.
I'll tell you, Don is, I hope the school releases you from your duties there at the school. I don't know what you tried to prove.
Are you a professor? Let's
thank God that it's not that South Park didn't have a show on called Let's Shoot a Jew Day, and then you went out to shoot a Christian. I taught elementary school, and the students there is do not, whatever you do, you do not put your hands, your feet, or any other object on any other student. And here you are, a professor at a college, and you're putting your hands on a woman because you find it funny.
Not hands.
That is ridiculous.
I kicked her in the butt. That is not technically assault. When you kick someone in the cheeks with their butt.
Whatever you want to call it, for your own little kick, and you're trying to push what you believe should be instead of kick a Jew. This girl had nothing to do with any of the Jews. She didn't kick any Jews. And you're trying to push. You're trying, and then you ridicule her and intimidate her, and all the other kids are laughing because they think it's funny, and this girl is trying to show you that, or to tell you that it's not funny, and what did you do, and then you still think it's funny? I hope this college, I hope that you're released.
Well, you have made a very nice case there to have me burned at the stake in much the same manner they did back in the, you know, in the 17th
absolutely.
Century.
And the schools should let you go. That's ridiculous. However, I would say that is ridiculous. What kind of point are you trying to prove?
I don't think you understand there's humor involved in kicking someone in the butt. Now,
there's
at
no
the college level...
How can there be humor in humiliating someone and intimidating someone?
Have you never...
To you?
I don't know if you've ever seen early comedies where they kick each other in the butt. That's very funny.
Oh, but this woman's a stranger.
Yeah, she is a stranger.
The woman's a stranger, and you walked up to a stranger and kicked her in the rear end.
I kicked the woman in the soft of her... I kicked her in the soft of her ass.
That's a wonderful thing that you kicked to where it was soft. Isn't that nice? And you chose that, too. Did you ask her where she
I do regret one thing, Jerry. I regret one thing. It wasn't you walking down that street that day.
I'm glad it wasn't me either, because you would be in a lot more trouble than what you are with this girl.
Oh, well, what were you going to do? Were you going to, kind of wag your finger at me?
I would have done everything possible to have you removed from that campus immediately, not to have the board come and talk to you immediately.
All right. This whole idea of Kick a Jew Day, a high school prank kind of a day, being replicated on college campuses sounds stupid. And then to respond to it with Kick a Christian sounds like you're just ratcheting it up.
Well, Phil, Kick a Jew Day is a clear attack on people, atheists, and, you know. And so what about kicking a Christian so they know how it feels after
Don,
they did the same? They basically kicked Jews in the ass. They kicked Jews in the ass for thousands of years. I think you understand
that. Let me leave you with this, Don. I know you're an atheist. How about God bless you?
Well, that's another way of saying go straight to the fire.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much for your call, Jerry. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Don Mixa from the University of Washington. Kick a Jew Day turns into Kick a Christian Day at the University of Washington. And there wasn't really a Kick a Christian Day, though. The thing that is, I find fascinating about this is the only Christian that was kicked in the rear end was this Carolyn Draska, a student at the university. And she immediately turned and had you called up in front of the board of review there.
Well, first of all, she didn't have me called up. I mean, you make it sound like I was dragged out of my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning by the Kick a Christian police. No, not at all. They called me, and I said to them, "What do you want?" And they said, "You have been. There's a complaint here against you." And I said, you know what, I'll get over there when I get over there. So I made it very clear to them that they weren't calling the shots. And this Ms. Draska, just because she took, and may I also say, Mr. Andrew, I was wearing a pair of sandals. Okay. So this Ms.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, if I was wearing a pair of sandals is what it means. So Ms. Draska.
I don't understand the significance. So you weren't wearing a shoe, so it didn't hurt as bad?
I was not wearing a shoe, yeah. It was the bare of my foot, and so I kicked her between the cheeks of her bottom, and I made the joke to the other students. I said, that is the closest I'm going to come to ever really getting a handful of that, which was a crude joke, but nonetheless.
Were there women there?
What's that got to do with it?
I'm just curious, when you're making these jokes about that's the closest I'm going to getting a handful of that, were there women there?
There were some females, and I've got a newsflash for you. They laughed. All right.
Well, because I think that you are hurting your case, Don. And when you say that this is about Kick a Christian and making a statement against Kick a Jew, and it's making a statement against believers who are kicking the asses of atheists, and then you turn around and you say, well, I kicked her with my bare foot, which gave me some kind of a thrill.
No, I did not say it gave me a thrill. I said it was the closest I was going to come to feeling her. I don't know how else you want me to put it.
Of touching her ass, is that it?
Yes. But when I said it, I was laughing. The students laughed. The female students laughed. And the only one that didn't laugh was this Draska, who was looking at me like I had crawled out from underneath a refrigerator that had bodies in it. That's the part that offended me. The that she looked like I was some sort of a... She looked at me, Phil, as if I was a cockroach that came out from underneath a refrigerator. But not just any refrigerator, a refrigerator that had body parts in it. And for me, as a professor, and for me, as a longtime resident of the Pacific Northwest, and for me, a man who respects and has done all he can for the great city of Seattle, and for me, a man who put himself through school, my mother died of cancer, my father was, I don't know what he was, because I never met him. And I did all of these things, and I'm looked at as if I'm a cockroach that lives under a refrigerator that isn't in anyone's home. It's in no one's garage. It may be in the back of a Ryder rent-a-truck. And inside of it are heads. And I felt on that day, when I kicked her softly in the ass and was looked at that way, I felt on that day my family was disgraced. I would have liked to have seen more Christians kicked as part of this movement, but our movement was stifled because she went off. And because she bruises easily, and I didn't know this either, she bruises easily in if you'll pardon my expression, the cheeks of her ass bruise easily. And they asked her about that, and she didn't want to get into it, and I find that to be pretty...
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Andrea in Chattanooga. Hi, Andrea. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Hey, the guy was asking if, you know, your other callers were teachers, and I am a teacher.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
So I want to say that if everybody on campus knew about the joke,
what?
And if everybody on campus knew about this joke, Kick a Jew Day or Kick a Christian Day or whatever it is,
exactly,
then the woman would have known that this is going to be going on. I can just either I want to participate, or if I don't want to participate, you know, just be out of the people's way. But if she didn't know anything about it, then this guy is wrong.
Well, we just invented it that moment. What happened was I was talking to my students, and I said, well, we've got to respond to Kick a Jew Day. They said, what do you suggest? I said, how about Kick a Christian Day? And I was casting my eyes about. We were down at the mall there near the Starbucks. And I saw this gal come down the street, and she's wearing this cross, you know, the cross around her neck. And I said, well, okay, watch. And so I got up, and as she passed me so that her back was to me, then I did a left turn, and with my right foot, you know, I nailed her pretty good, but it wasn't so bad that there was any bleeding.
I understand, but...
Yeah.
But she clearly did not know what was going on.
Bruising? Bruising, doesn't that mean the police...
Oh, please.
If you bruise somebody...
Please.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you know, my understanding has always been that if you leave physical marks on people...
Please. When are we going to be able to have a day on campus where we can relax, walk up to someone, kick them in the ass, excuse my language, and laugh about it? No, she turns around. She wants the license number of the truck that hit her. She wants to know, and I said, you know what, I was wearing bare feet. The lady's name is Andrea?
Yeah.
Andrea, I had on sandals. So I said to her, my bare foot,
it doesn't matter. And you know why people can't just laugh about things anymore? Is because people are so politically correct about everything. There.
Absolutely. And this woman, and I'm an atheist, but I have nothing against Christians. I've got nothing against Christians except, yeah, I'd like to kick them in the ass every now and again just to see what it's like, but okay.
Yeah, all right. Well, anyway, Andrea, thank you for your call. You know, that sounds to me like you want to kick them in the ass every now and again. Are you anti-Christian?
No, I am not anti-Christian, Phil. No, I am not anti-Christian. And
then tell me...
I'm just saying that it would feel good to be able to kick them in the ass, to walk up and kick them in the ass every now and again, and that woman whose ass I did kick, and I made the biggest mistake of my life when I said to Josh Randall, who's one of my students, I said, what a great ass she's got. That was the quote. It will haunt me for the rest of my life because now they think I was trying to cop a feel with my foot. And I don't know that there's anything stranger than that, you know.
Now they think what?
The board asked me, were you trying to cop a feel with your foot? And I said, where do you get your blank blank big enough to ask me a question like that?
All right. Don, thank you. 877-876-PHIL. Here, 877-876-7445. Don Mixa on Kick a Christian Day. He wound up booting some woman in the rear end on campus at the University of Washington. He got up in front of a board of review, and it turned into quite the contretemps. Next hour, we have Stephen Bozell in our news hour with, of course, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and of course our website, philhendryshow.com. You want to pick up our best-of CDs. These are our archival best-of CDs. You can pick them up there in our merchandise store. And I can tell you, we've got another beautiful piece of merchandise coming your way very, very shortly, as well as we've been talking, a whole new video look for the show, and we're getting started on that next week. But it's all there at philhendryshow.com, plus our archives and our live streaming video of the show, so check it out. We have Steve Bozell coming up next hour to talk about this TV show called Skins on MTV. A first-grade teacher has been accused of taping a kid's mouth shut. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Well, I guess. An unidentified Schertz Elementary School teacher has been put... Schertz. Now, that would be in Schertz, Texas.
Like, will you wear a shirt?
No, not the way you'd wear a shirt. S-C-H-E-R-T-Z. Okay, so it's like a Germanic thing, man, because a lot of Germans and Hungarians settled in West Texas. Did you know that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
That's why you said they play accordion.
That's right. That's exactly why they play accordion. That's why you hear a lot of accordion music in Mexican ranchero music. You've heard that?
Yeah.
That's because the Eastern Europeans, when they settled the rangelands out there in western Texas, they brought along their little accordions, and that got worked into the Mexican music of the day. And so that's an interesting story that I'm not sure I needed to tell. Anyway, an unidentified Schertz Elementary School teacher has been put on paid administrative leave and is under investigation, accused of covering a talkative student's mouth with scotch tape. Is this a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Danny Kelly told News 4 WOAI he and his wife were called to his 7-year-old daughter's school for a conference Tuesday morning. Kelly says the principal told them it was a couple of his daughter's classmates who first reported the mouth taping incident. Is this the child that got her mouth taped shut? I guess it was. So, in any event, the alleged incident happened before Christmas break. According to Kelly, his daughter Serena claims she was too afraid to speak up about the humiliating incident. The upset father says taping the child's mouth could have triggered a health emergency because his daughter has asthma and is a mouth breather.
I thought that meant it's stupid.
What do you mean you thought that meant it? What does that mean, stupid?
Yeah, you know, like a mouth breather, a nose picker.
That doesn't mean they're stupid. I mean, some kids are dumb when they mouth breathe, but...
You know, you mouth breathe.
Yes, sometimes I do mouth breathe. All right. And maybe that does mean I'm stupid. So anyway, here is 7-year-old Serena Kelly talking to KABB-TV in San Antonio about what happened in her classroom.
He pinned it. It was a big piece of tape right here. I couldn't breathe very good. And it was... He left it on. And he went back to his desk.
How'd you get the tape off?
The teacher came and took it off.
And then what did he tell you?
Be quiet.
The girl's dad, Danny, tells WOAI-TV that the actions of the teacher were inappropriate.
She had tape put over her mouth because she was talking in class. If she would have told me on the day that it would have happened, I probably would have went up there and talked to him myself. The main thing she told me and the number one thing she remembers is after he took the tape off of her mouth and told her to be quiet, all the kids laughed in the class and humiliated her. She has asthma. She has a very bad problem breathing through her nasal passage. So she's a mouth breather. She always breathes through her mouth. There has to be something done to the teacher, like some kind of action like that shouldn't have been done, especially to a first grader.
You know, the thing that I want to know is and I don't mean to be cynical, but why does anybody want to be a teacher, you know?
Well, you didn't start talking about how parents are bad, everything.
No, but I know, seriously, just listen to me for a minute. Every time we hear about parents and teachers, they're in conflict. Every time we hear about parents and teachers, they're at each other's throats about something. Every time I hear about parents and teachers in this godforsaken world of what we call news, they're having a problem with each other. They're not doing their jobs. The parents are this. The teachers are that. I'm telling you, you'd swear to God that the parents and the teachers of America are at each other's throats morning, noon, and night. You never hear anything else, man. And if I was a teacher, forget about parents. If I was a teacher, why the hell would I want to work in that industry or that profession or whatever you want to call it?
Well, you got to be careful, man, with people's kids.
I know you got to be careful with people's kids, but you'd swear to God that every teacher in America is not careful with people's kids. Because every time I listen to the news, well, a teacher did this wrong and a teacher did that wrong. And another parent is outraged and they're upset and they're, oh, my God, the eyeball rolling that goes on with parents in this country. You know, they'll probably roll their eyeballs back in their heads permanent, just like our parents said.
You mean like this, right?
Don't do that, man.
Yeah, it's going to stay that way.
No, it's not.
Get it out.
Don't do that with your eyes, okay? So here's a guy, he's got a problem, and the kid and the teacher into this and that, okay? So what, is the teacher going to get fired? Is the teacher going to prison? Will they have capital punishment for the teacher? What do you think should happen? The teacher put scotch tape on a kid's mouth. Well, it was a health thing, Phil. Sure. All right, fire the guy. And then force him to, like, go pick up garbage. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show. Steve Buzell next hour.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
Mama just killed a man.
The Constitution doesn't have a preamble.
It's embarrassing.
Only normal for a kid of 16 not to have
that. I mean, it's a sick sign of hate.
This is not a PR move. They're in trouble. They have crossed the line.
This will leave a foul taste in your mouth.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we take it places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, so they don't, and they won't. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Next hour, our news hour, news and topic hour, with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. This hour we have Steve Buzell to talk with us about MTV's Skins. For those of you who are golfers, by the way, yes, that's right, golfers, when we hear that, we think of a kind of a golf competition called Skins. But obviously this has nothing to do with that. This has to do with an MTV show, and it involves teenagers. It reportedly had executives at the cable station worried over whether or not some scenes in upcoming episodes might violate federal child pornography statutes. It's interesting calling it a cable station. It's more like a cable network. I don't know who wrote this. It's AP. No. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL and our website, philhendryshow.com. That's the strong right arm of the Phil Hendry Show, where our podcast can be heard each and every day. So tomorrow, head on over to our website or to iTunes and pick up a podcast of tonight's show. That's right. All of them downloads, as well as our classic podcasts, which are free, as well as the downloads that are available in our archives, more and more made every single day. We just loaded in another month of downloads yesterday. It's at philhendryshow.com. So here is the story. MTV's new show, Skins, reportedly had executives at the cable, quote, station, end quote, worried over whether or not some scenes in upcoming episodes might violate federal child pornography statutes. Another group shares their concern, the Parent Television Council, and they're asking now for a federal investigation. That's pretty heavy. Here in this clip from MTV's TV show Skins, Chris, the name of one of the characters, tells his friend how to lose his virginity.
It's embarrassing.
It's totally normal for a kid of 16 not to have had sex.
It's embarrassing.
So we go to a party, and we get some girl precociously splipped up. In her confused state, she comes to believe, however momentarily, of course, that you're attractive. And then she bangs her brains out.
Here is that a reality show? Because of these reality shows, they all sound like they're scripted now. Here is Brent Bozell of the Media Research Center and the Parents Television Council and God knows what else. This guy's with the Parents Television Council. Telling Fox News Sean Hannity he's outraged over skins.
This is not a PR move. They're in trouble. They have crossed the line in the way no TV show, to my memory, has ever crossed the line. This is a show about teenage, underage kids involved in drugs and alcohol and sex and orgies and you name the debauchery. It features underage children. They broadcast the fact that it is underage teenagers that they're putting on the air doing these things. And guess what? Here's one thing that will really get you. It's rated TVMA. That means it's rated for mature audience. That means it's rated for adults. This is a program they're giving to adults about children. You know what we call that, Sean, in the real world? It's called kiddie porn.
Stephen Bozell is a father, a construction contractor, and sometimes contributor to our radio show in Corona, California. Mr. Bozell, you have watched this show?
I did watch a episode of the show, yes, sir.
Tell me, all right, so you watched this show as a concerned parent?
The first time that I saw the show, it was on the television. My younger two were watching it. My son, Steve and April, were watching this program. And I had come in from outside, where I think I'd been to out to the store, and I came in and they're watching a show called Skins, and I sat down and I thought, you know, this is pretty adult, you know, and I wasn't sure at that time that I wanted my kids watching it, and there were scenes in it that were quite frankly adult, and I, you know, told my wife at the time, I said, but you know, this has got me feeling, as an adult man, I'm looking at some of these women, you know, and I'm thinking, if I was a single man, you know, I want to be, having relations. And I told my wife, you know, because she wasn't going to get mad at that. It's just how I talk to her and everything that I'd want to have relations. I found out the next day, and I made a note of it in a notebook, and I talked to my attorney at approximately 10:30. I was speaking with Cliff Pettigrew, who's a member of one of my construction crews, who told me at that time that the actors on that television show, Skin, are underage teenage girls and underage teenage boys. And I said that I was shocked and I was ashamed. And he asked me at that time why. And I said, because you can well imagine if you've seen. And I asked him, did you see it? And he said, no, he hadn't seen it, but he heard that I had seen it. I'm a little bit nervous.
No, you're doing fine, sir. So you watched the show, and you thought they were adult actors?
I thought they were adult.
And you found out that they were teenage actors the next day from this coworker?
Yes, sir. And
now, you say you took a note because you were going to call your attorney?
I made a note at the time that Mr. Pettigrew told me. And he said that he had heard that I'd watched it, and so he wanted me to know, before I do anything today, I want you to know that what you looked at last night were basically underage children, and you were telling us how you, you know, got interested, and you were probably, you know, you said you could be interested in one or two of them. And I said I did not know at that time that they were underage children. And he said, well, but you did say that you could be interested. And I said, at that time I realized I told my wife that too. I called up my attorney and told her quite graphically and very with total graphic. I was very graphic and I said that I feel ashamed of myself because I saw this show and I was attracted to one or two of the ones I saw. And she said, why are you ashamed? I said, because now I find out they're underage. And she said, that's a problem. So what I'm basically saying about...
All right, so to sum up here, you feel this show is dangerous because you found yourself attracted to the actors?
Well, initially, yes, sir. And of course, when you find out that they're children, that you realize that you have been lied to and that you have been manipulated by the MTV television show, that at that time is when I did, at that time, then I did say to my lawyer that I would like to prepare some kind of an action against MTV.
And all right, so, Mr. Bozell, you realize that you have, and your name, by the way, you're not related to Brent Bozell, are you?
No, sir, I'm not.
All right, because these are two different men. But Mr. Brent Bozell of this media committee here believes that he has a complaint to file against the Federal Communications Commission. You believe you have a lawsuit against the producers of this show for what, sir? For
well, I believe that I have an emotional cruelty damages to my reputation. I had told, you know, and also the fact that I believe it's false advertising. I believe that it's criminal because you can't tell somebody, oh, this is an adult show, and you know, take a look at that.
But you know that you're watching a show that's purportedly about teenagers, right?
Yes, sir. However, those could be adult actors.
Oh, okay. So if it was about teenagers, but they were adult actors, you don't have a problem with that?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. But I will tell you this. I would feel a lot better if I were being, you know, if I got interested in one or two of them. I would feel a lot better if they were adults, but the fact that they're, you know, underage, and the youngest actor on the show is 15, the main character who, right away, you know, the main character is nude, and was nude from behind, and will be in future episode number 17, Tony, is going to be in future episode of 17, and he's seen nude.
So this young man is nude?
Yes, sir. And I'm here to tell you and anyone else in your audience that you see that, and of course, you look at the young women, and you're going to naturally think, you know, I'd like to, maybe, you know, but you don't know. You think they're adults.
And so you're aroused by
it's natural. Hold on for a minute. That is, it's natural to be aroused. You know, it's going to happen. You don't want to. It's not that you want to be aroused by a kid, but they're making it so they dress them up that way. In episode number 3, I'm told Tony, who's this 17-year-old, is going to be nude from behind, and he will have taken a Viagra, and that's the joke of the episode. So you keep getting forced to think about, you know, him.
You're forced to think about him. What?
Well, I think any man or woman are going to be seeing him. He's 17. He's got no pants on, and he took a Viagra. So now you're imagining, you know, what it looks like and everything. And that's what MTV is doing.
And all right. So the belief here is that MTV has forced you into being attracted to underage kids. Is there such a thing, you know?
Absolutely, because they said that this was adults. They told me it was adult actors. I didn't even know it was supposedly about kids. I thought it was just about some college students. And then, one of them is riding his bike home or something. I suddenly went. So the point is that, well, I tell you, I mean, they got to warn people, because you're looking at a teenage girl and you're loving every moment of it, and you suddenly go, she's 15. You know, so, and I don't think...
Do you think the average man is going to look at a show and see teenage girls and become aroused?
Oh, I think it's normal, yeah. I think it's normal.
And you really do? You think it's normal? Even a man who has daughters, even a man who's familiar with girls that age and what separates an adult man from a child?
Well, Mr. Hendry, I don't know what you're talking about, you know.
I'm just asking, you know. If a guy sees that and becomes aroused by that, if he's an older man, doesn't he turn it off or sort of get or reset his thinking?
No, you have to understand something, that MTV shows teens with their, with that one boy had his pants off, and the other, and the girls all have large breasts, and that's, there's no way that you can't be, you don't want to, you know, be interested in that. And that's why I feel I've been manipulated into being attracted to, you know, child pornography by looking at the show.
All right, and okay, so, and you've talked to your attorney. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Mr. Stephen Bozell of Corona, California. And he's talking about this TV show, MTV Skins. It's a, it's a show about teenagers. It shows nudity. There's sexual activity. And you, and Mr. Bozell is basically saying to us that he's become decidedly attracted to or was sexually aroused by the underage actors in this TV show. 877, and by the way, it's not his fault. It's MTV's fault. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Not my fault.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. We're talking about MTV's Skins. Stephen Bozell of Corona, California, a father and a concerned father at that, talking about this show Skins. You watch the show. You're not talking here about necessarily the young actors now. You're talking about your reaction and other men's reaction to this show, basically saying that maybe it's okay to be attracted to teenage girls.
Well, the message that I got from MTV when they showed this Eleanor, who is 15, and she's, I mean, I thought she was probably 20, you know, in her 23 or 21, the way she looked, is that obviously this is, you know, some, I mean, that's, you know, I shouldn't say, but that's a piece of, you know, piece of you know what. And I'm looking at that, and my wife told me, and also my daughter said, Daddy, why are you looking? I said, you know, I got no choice.
You're telling your daughter that you have no choice but to stare at a 15-year-old girl because she is sexual in nature.
Mr. Hendry, you sound very judgmental. Have you seen some of what they that they got? I mean,
sir, I can assure you that I've seen every kind of sexualized image of teenagers there is. I live in America. I live in a country right now that thinks it's fun to sexualize children. It's disgusting. It makes me want to throw up, but I got no choice. Just like you said, I got to stare at it everywhere I go. Now, you're looking at this on MTV, and you're saying what, sir?
Well, I don't think I like your inference.
What are you saying, that you're attracted to them?
I'm saying that MTV has been given me no choice but to be aroused by the...
Oh.
No, not O, sir. Not O.
What does your attorney say?
My lawyer says that I have a case against MTV for making me get... for making me want to be interested, or to find out, you know, I could be interested in Eleanor, and I find out.
You're interested in Eleanor. She's 15, and you're how old, sir? You're 41, right?
Yes, sir.
877-876-PHIL.
Well, you're going to just go to a phone call and leave me, you know, twisted in the breeze.
Yep. No, I, you made your point. I want to get to a phone call. 877-876-7445. Lynn in Mobile, Alabama. Go ahead, Lynn. You're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Stephen Bozell.
I am so disappointed. If this is what our judicial system has come to, that this man has a lawsuit. First question is, when he walked in and supposedly his younger children were watching MTV and he saw this, why didn't he unplug it instead of sitting down watching it with them? Okay?
Because I wanted to monitor it. I wanted to monitor it and make sure I knew what, you know. I wanted to monitor it. Don't you monitor
showing,
with your
you're
children?
Showing them, watching this with them, is showing them that this is acceptable behavior. And
but I didn't know.
I like to say, I don't care if you didn't know they were 15. Or 16, or 17. The fact is, you're watching television with your children showing partial nudity. that shows them this is acceptable behavior to you.
One more point. If you have teenagers, and that's when I got aroused about it.
Well, that's even worse.
Here's the thing. It's sad that you would sit there with your children and get aroused, even if these kids are 20 or 21 or 22. You're showing them that you condone it, even if you were judging it, by sitting there watching it with them. And if you, my husband is a police officer, and let me tell you what, that kind of justice, I mean, you
do not. No, because this is on TV. This is on MTV, ma'am. This is on MTV. It ain't no kiddie porn.
This is not on MTV. This is on
what's going
on in your head.
You can't arrest me for what's going on in my head, lady.
You
can't arrest me for what's
brother.
Going on in my head.
And
your police officer husband, you should find out from your husband if he can arrest people for the things with this ain't no Nazi Germany or boy.
Well, you know what?
No, hold on. Lynn, I want to say something.
And it's always
Lynn's making a good point. She's saying, what is going on in your head?
What's going on in my head is what MTV put there. Garbage.
Oh, please. Oh,
and
please.
I didn't.
That's ridiculous. Every sexual predator in this country blames it on somebody else. And I hope you get a jury. If this thing ever does go to trial, how ridiculous. I can ever sit on a jury like that. Take responsibility for your own actions, raise your own children, and this country will not be in the shape that it's in.
Ma'am, I bet you anything you put your daughter in one of them beauty pageants, didn't you? Yeah, I bet you did.
Put my daughter in what? I can't hear you.
In a little tiny baby beauty pageant. You ever seen the baby beauty?
I raised two daughters.
Yeah, you put them in a baby booty.
Softball players, okay?
That's a whole other area. Did not sexually
exploit my children and raise them to be ladies. Okay?
No, you just taught them to play softball. It's a whole other kettle of fish.
Hey. All right, Lynn.
That's what they chose to do.
Exactly. Thank you, Lynn. Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. We'll be back with Stephen Bozell and the TV show Skins. Is it child porn, and should he be getting aroused by it?
Phil Henry.
Yeah, I should be.
It's the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show here, and from the El Pacifico here tonight, we have with us on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, Mr. Stephen Bozell, as he talks about his family and about this TV show Skins on MTV. If you don't know, it's a television program that follows the life and the times and the adventures of teenagers, but it has in it nudity. It has some sexual, activity. It has, in other words, the representations of activities that one would consider to be pornographic kiddie porn, because these are underage actors. These are teenage actors engaged in this, and you're seeing nudity. What, Mr. Bozell, is this nudity again?
Yes, sir. It's on episode 7. They had this one kid, Tony, in his pants. He pulls his pants down, and you can see, you can see it. And also, he takes Viagra in that episode. And that's when, you can well imagine, because of his taking the Viagra, you imagine his, aroused and everything. And so I've gotten to the point now, because of MTV doing this, I told my daughter and I told my son, too. I said, I can't have your friends come over, because now I have been trained, or if you want to call it, made to be thinking about teens as a sex object. And
now, wait a minute. Are you telling your kids that their friends are not safe around you?
No, sir. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I would much rather they not have their friends over, because look what MTV is doing to teenagers. And so, if I'm an adult, like any adult that's seen MTV, we're going to look at that show on MTV, and we're going to look at teenagers, and we're going to all of a sudden say, man, I got a half hour. I got maybe I got the afternoon. let's see where it goes, you know, and that's the most unhealthy thing. And
I got the afternoon, let's see where it goes. So you're talking about some kind of almost irrational thought process, not even remotely something you're in control of. Is that right?
No, you are in control of it, but you don't want to look at your daughter's friend and wonder, you know, if she's available or, you know, what's her live-in situation or...
How old is your daughter?
15.
15? You're going to look at a 15-year-old girl that way?
If you haven't seen the show that I'm talking about, Skins...
No, I have not seen it. I haven't, but I and maybe I'm prejudging, but I have to tell you, unless it's some of the most powerful propaganda that's ever existed, these are not thoughts that I would think would come from just watching a show that, yes, its production, its intent, its script, its use of actors is immoral. But how that perverts you, I'm having a hard time understanding. Jennifer in Fresno, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Dude, you are sick. You are sick. I have a 15-year-old daughter, and if my husband, that's not her dad, saw a show like that, like, he would turn it off. He wouldn't watch it. You are sick.
Not her dad. What do you mean, not her dad?
It's not her dad. It's her stepdad, and he wouldn't even watch it.
That doesn't worry you? That doesn't worry you?
No, it doesn't worry me at all. He would
be. You have a stepdad running around there?
He would be mad at me.
Yeah.
He doesn't watch. He hates when I watch those shows. And he's like, what do
you watch them? So you watch them?
I watch them, yeah. I like them. Some of them.
You like to look at teenagers with their clothes off.
Excuse me?
That's what I'm talking about.
You know the show we're talking about, Jennifer?
I like to watch that. No, I don't like to watch that.
Well, you
I'm
know,
not.
Well, it's
I,
too late.
I haven't
it's
watched.
Too, no,
skin.
It's too late. You
I
said you like it. No,
yet. My daughter
late.
Likes
you
that show.
Like you said you like it. It's too late.
You are and sick. You are so.
No,
sick.
You're sick. You like to watch Skins. You want to see a nude boy.
No, she said she didn't watch that show.
I've never watched Skins yet. My daughter watches it. I haven't watched that show.
Oh,
I watch
your
a lot
daughter
of shows
watches
on
nude
TV.
Boys. Your daughter watches nude boys. This lady.
That is.
You're digging yourself
sick,
deeper.
Dude.
You're digging yourself deeper. You know,
you
every
are
time.
So sick. If
no,
it arouses
sick.
You, turn
your
it off.
Your daughter's watching it, and then their stepdad, who God only knows what he's about.
What?
And,
you know
what? I can't hear you. What did you just say?
I said that you're watching nude boys, and your daughter, too, and then the stepdad, too, is going out there. And
we can't hear you, Steve.
I don't stutter.
Yeah, you are stuttering. You are disgusting. You make me sick.
No, you're the one that said you want to watch it, not me. So you're, you know, that's on you. That's on you. You blew it.
Oh,
you
my
blew
God.
It bad.
No, you just need to try it off. 877-867-6-PHIL.
Let's go over to James here in Houston. James, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you know what? Why don't you do yourself a favor and not watch.
My name is James.
Why don't you do your kids a favor and not watch that show with your kids? Because you're probably thinking about
James.
Watching that show with them. And another thing, too, that I think it's unhealthy.
My name ain't James, and I don't stutter.
We know you don't stutter.
Yeah, I know. You called me James.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm a little nervous talking on the phone.
That's
but
okay.
Did you hear
I
what
watch
I
it with my
why
kid.
You,
have you
I'm
seen here. It? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I'm still here.
No, have you seen that show, Skins? Have you seen that show, Skins?
I'm sorry?
Okay. 877-876-PHIL. Steve, you're asking people if they've seen the show. What's the point? You know.
Well, I mean, the point is, are they... That lady said she watches all in shows.
No, but the point is, you're trying to, you know, like misery loves company. You're trying to say, well, you know, I got, you know, I have company here. There's other people that like this show.
I'm telling you that there are more people that are watching Skins. You heard that one lady from Fresno. I don't even want to tear down what trailer park she lives in. But she says that she's got a stepdad there. She loves to watch those shows. Her daughter watches those shows. She's calling me sick. Probably a meth lab not more than 50 yards away from that.
All right, you can't characterize people like that. If you like to watch these shows, but the lawsuit that you're bringing against MTV, wanting to shut that down because you get aroused.
I'm telling you that I'm not the only one. And this show, Skins, that shows teenagers. That lady just said she lets her daughter watch a show where the boy had his pants taken off. Okay?
What do you mean taken off? Did he take his pants off?
He did.
All right, and there's nudity.
Yes, there is. You better believe it. They had nudity, and then there's... And also they had him taken Viagra. What is that about? So when the kid turns around, you know, here's John Holmes or whatever, I don't know. And so that has been a manipulation of me that's been going on, and also other people. And that's why I'm trying to warn people, and I talk to my attorney.
Well, the best of luck to you, man, you know.
No, but good luck to that lady in the trailer park.
Yeah, well, to whoever, because you know, as long as you're looking at that program and you're looking at the people on that show the way you're looking at them, I don't think there's a judge in the world, man, that's going to hold against MTV. All right, next hour, we have our news hour. Thank you very much, Mr. Bozell. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, Dr. Green Thumb. Paging Dr. Green Thumb.
Let's go to the Dr. Green Thumb report as long as we can here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show on this Friday night. Police officer accused of taking seized marijuana. A Winter Haven police officer, that would be Winter Haven, Florida, is accused of pilfering a marijuana bud following the department's seizure of marijuana plants from a home. Authorities say that the 36-year-old officer, a real dumbass by the name of Ricardo Flores, well, I mean, you gotta be, man, you know, was just ending his shift at 7 p.m. Wednesday as detectives were unloading marijuana plants from a truck. As the evidence was being processed, an officer saw Flores take a marijuana bud from a plant and conceal it. When the officer reported what he saw, Flores was called back to the department. Officers recovered the stolen marijuana, and Flores was charged with burglary of a conveyance, petty theft, and possession of marijuana. Flores was suspended pending an internal investigation. Winter Haven Police Chief Gary Hester commended the officer who reported the incident, saying, "No one is above the law." Nice going, man. So that's the end of you being a cop, but maybe didn't want to be one anyway. Roswell third graders caught smoking dope. This is great. Roswell, New Mexico. Authorities in Roswell, you know, where everybody's concerned about aliens and Area 51 and all of that stupid-ass stuff. Well, guess what? The third graders, they're smoking weed.
Maybe they got it from an alien.
Maybe it's alien weed. Authorities in Roswell say two third graders at Berendo Elementary School have been caught by their principal smoking dope in a bathroom. When a responding sheriff's deputy asked one of the boys how many times he had smoked pot, the boy replied he has, quote, hit it hard a lot. Whoa! 8 years old, man. Chavez County Sheriff's Lieutenant Britt Snyder told the Roswell Daily Record so they could put something on the front page other than, you know, little green men. The deputies have responded to calls about drugs at elementary schools before, but Snyder says the January 10th incident marked the first time he'd ever heard of third graders using drugs. According to police reports, Principal Kathleen Galloway doesn't want to press charges and will punish the children administratively through the school. Where are the parents? The sheriff's office contacted the Children, Youth, and Families Department to determine the case to be closed. Where are the freaking parents? I don't know. Those are the ones that I'd be, you know, I'm in favor of throwing more of these parents in the joint. Cameron Diaz, I bought marijuana from Snoop Dogg. Yes. Narking out Snoop Dogg, Cameron Diaz has alleged that she bought marijuana from Snoop in high school. The rapper was in the year above the night and day actress at Long Beach Polytechnic in California, Long Beach. Diaz told George Lopez, host of Lopez Tonight, that meeting Snoop Dogg was her claim to fame prior to establishing herself as an actress. He was very tall and skinny, wore lots of ponytails in his hair, and I'm pretty sure I got weed from him. I had to have had, to have had, 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 to have had. Well, if you don't really know...
Yeah, what's he doing that for?
Nice going, man. You narked the guy out, and maybe you didn't even buy any of that smelly-ass skunk that you smoked. Anyway... I used to get into fights with boys more than girls. For some reason, boys like to fight me, she continued. Tee-hee. But one time in junior high, I had this girl come up to me in the locker room from behind and pull my hair. I had to shut her down. So this was just a general interview with George Lopez showing that she's a badass. And yes, she's got blonde hair, but her last name is Diaz.
I love that Diaz, man. Look at that Diaz.
Whatever. Alleged marijuana traffickers call cops after their car is hijacked. Here is a real brain surgeon, if ever I heard of one. In Sinclair, Wyoming, if you're illegally transporting marijuana across the United States, do you call the cops? This is a question posed by Howard Parkhurst of the Denver Post. Do you call the cops if you're carjacked? Well, that dilemma faced two people Friday night as they hauled 170 pounds of high-grade marijuana from Utah to North Carolina. In the middle of Wyoming, the marijuana traffickers had their car hijacked. According to the Wyoming Highway Patrol, the victims decided to call the cops. As of Wednesday, three people are in custody, the man and woman who were allegedly transporting the dope, and one of the two male carjackers, according to Sergeant Stephen Townsend, spokesman for the Wyoming Highway Patrol. Townsend said that about 9 p.m. on Friday, troopers were told of the alleged carjacking. The victims said a couple of guys in a red SUV had taken their car by force. The victims had been left unharmed next to the interstate. So far, so good. A short time later, troopers spotted both the red SUV and the carjacked vehicle. The men were transferring bundles of marijuana from the car to the SUV. When the alleged carjackers spotted the cops, they sped away, tossing packages of weed from the SUV. At Rawlins, Wyoming, the SUV sped into town. One of the alleged carjackers jumped out. The SUV slammed into a snowbank, and the driver fled. The first of the alleged carjackers was apprehended with the help of the Rawlins Police Department. The second guy, he got away. Anyway, officials seized the marijuana, which has a street value of about $425,000. The sidewalk value, though, about $325,000. The rooftop value. Anyway, Townsend said that the two victims of the carjacking were allegedly transporting their illegal load, if you'll pardon the expression.
That's what she said.
Oh, shut up.
Shut up, man.
The illegal load from Utah to an unknown location in North Carolina. The Wyoming Highway Patrol has interesting, if not bizarre, cases. Yeah, I'll bet they do. You can't make this stuff up, said Townsend, as he scribbled in a notepad. Finally, cops. A 70-year-old Texas man ran a drug operation. The search of a 70-year-old man's home in South Austin led police to rake in drugs, a gun, and $87,000 in cash. With the help of a search warrant Wednesday afternoon, authorities got their hands on a one quarter pound of marijuana and numerous prescription pills, which are considered controlled substances. In addition, they found a rifle and the stash of money. Michael Walter Moeller is charged with possession of marijuana and delivery of a controlled substance. And I remember when stories about elderly people smoking dope and buying and selling dope was very unusual, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because all of a sudden it was like old people went from not liking it and selling it and everything.
Yeah, well, didn't nobody like old people smoke dope when you was coming up?
I wouldn't know the answer to that, bud, when I was coming up. The only old people that smoked dope when I was coming up were like former beatniks and stuff, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, just like cats that were, if I was a teen, like, you know, I don't know, man. Like cats that were like beatniks or something. So just people that were in the jazz thing in the 40s and the 50s, you know. Those are the only people who were smoking weed back then. And that was a very, very heavy, heavy charge. All right, so that's our Dr. Green Thumb report. And when I say a heavy charge, you know, they had... They had celebrity arrests, all kinds of stuff back in the day. That you could get 20, 30 years. Easy. All right, 877-876-PHIL. We have a story here about the American Idol kids. Would-be idols throw down their best performances, and they are the least telegenic. Now, this is when you're really getting desperate for news. And, oh, my God, is American Idol getting desperate for news? They released this, and, of course, we'll run with it. And it is the following thing. The kids that are doing the best on this, the initial season of American Idol, are apparently ugly. That's what non-telegenic means. Now, why this is a story, Ruben Stoddard was a big, fat tub of guts. What made him so handsome?
No, I mean, why does that make him ugly?
What do you mean, why does that make him ugly? What is this story supposed to mean? But, you know, that the kids are non-telegenic. So here's the story. It says the second installment of American Idol's 10th season could have been called Revenge of the Nerds. Two of the Thursday's least telegenic would be Idol's threw down to evening's most commanding vocals. That throwdown means they performed. You know, they're just working that to death. Threw down to evening's most... It's an old Wild West term that meant pull your gun, throw down. And nowadays it means either let's fight or it's just a far-out performance on American Idol. Nonetheless, threw down to evening's most commanding performance, vocals, in the week's second episode of auditions. It commanded a huge rating last night with 22 million. Was that a huge rating? People tuning in, the only show to come even remotely close was The Medalist, 15 million. Anyway, Brent Lowenstern, a 16-year-old avowed bullying victim, the high-pitched redheaded youth, was called a nerd and a dork in school.
Well, okay. Ain't that the ones that sing good?
Pretty much, yeah. What is so far, I don't get the point of this story.
No, I don't either.
Every kid that is a success as an artist was a nerd or a dork. Later in the show, an unconventionally figured, meaning chubby, 15-year-old named Jace Badeau offered a gelato smooth version of Otis Redding. So they're really, really desperate for news over there. All right, let's listen now, folks. Here is American Idol. Before his audition, American Idol featured 16-year-old Brett Lowenstein in a segment that discussed being bullied as a kid.
I'm 16 years old. I'm a high school student, and I'm from Boca Raton, Florida. I would describe myself as just different, you know, like a red apple in a pile of green apples, you know? I like to stand out. Growing up, starting in about the third grade, people would pick on me, and it would hurt a lot.
Uh-huh.
I was never really invited to birthday parties, and they would call me, you're a dork, you're a geek. It was really hard for me.
How about it?
I'm taking a sip of Coke, okay? That's how bored I am. Anyway, here he is singing.
Mama just killed a man. Put a gun against his head. Pull my trigger, now he's dead. Mama.
He sucks.
Oh, no, man.
What are you talking about?
He stinks.
Make you cry.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
This time tomorrow.
Talking about, man, that's fantastic.
Carry on.
Nah, he stinks.
Carry on.
Oh, that's terrible.
Nothing really matters.
Wow.
Stop.
Holy wow. Mackerel.
Two goose pimples and it's still morning. His speaking voice and then the voice that came out of you. And now I simply read because of the hair, but
the
also
hair
because
products.
Of the soul.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You were fabulous.
Oh, we got to the point he was fabulous. They told him to stop. They told him to shut up. They told him to...
I left my home in Georgia.
That's nasty, man.
Headed for the Frisco Bay.
The boys call it ball tapping.
Because I've had nothing to live for.
I would be wanting to smack you
inside
the head.
It seems like nothing's going to come my way. So I'm just going to sit on the dock of the bay.
Put that thing in your mouth.
Watching the tide roll away.
What did Randy say?
Put that thing in your mouth.
Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
You think he's gay?
Oh, shut up. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Thanks very much, kids. And
put that thing in your mouth.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I'm 16 years old, I'm a high school student, and I'm from Boca Raton, Florida.
Well, it might seem like it's for kind of a useless cause.
It was a big piece of tape right here.
She's a strong person, a fighter. I mean, she is a fighter like...
He indicates that she had been rear-ended.
This will leave a foul taste in your mouth.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and we take you through the looking glass and beyond to places that other talk shows wish they could go, but they cannot go.
My name is Roger Ebert. I love the Phil Hendry Show.
Thanks a lot, Roger. Now,
that's not funny.
I didn't say it was funny. I didn't say it was funny.
The other one's funny.
Yeah, I know the other one's funny. But thought I'd play it.
Well, why'd you play it? Not funny.
Because I thought it might be funny, and it's not funny. With his electronic voice and his new jaw. Anyway, we'll talk about Roger Ebert, who took our advice. Didn't take our advice, but we did say on the show, and perhaps it sounded cruel, but I think that in the final analysis, if we, you know, we offered that opinion, that maybe the guy ought to put a jaw on, man, because that kisser that he had, he looked like something out of some Mighty Mouse cartoon or something.
Yeah, he's all jacked up, man.
I mean, you can't do that, man. I don't mean the point that I made, and I think it was a valid point. There are people out there who have suffered from the same malady, the same terribly disfiguring disease, and they don't have the resources and the money that Roger Ebert has. And he thinks he's just walking around, well, I'll put my jaw in this week so I don't look like something off another planet, and I'm going to be on TV. Well, thanks so much, man. So I don't have any, you know. Anyway, so we're not trying to make any jokes about it, and far be it from us to...
Now that Keith Olbermann has been fired, I hope to replace him on MSNBC.
All right, thank you. So, Olbermann leaves Countdown on MSNBC. This was a big shockaroo, baby.
I couldn't believe it, and I seen it on Twitter and everything.
I couldn't believe it either. I thought the... I know that Dicklin News tweeted it, which, by the way, if you go to Twitter... You should follow the Phil Hendry Show Twitter accounts. We have twitter.com/realphilhendry, twitter.com/philhendryshow, twitter.com/Dicklin News, D-I-C-K-L-I-N News, twitter.com/Margaret Gray, Bobby Dooley. I mean, you know.
We'll put a list up.
Go over to Twitter and go to Real Phil Hendry and we'll put a list up. Exactly. All right. Keith Olbermann, the highest rated host on... Excuse me.
God, man.
But you gave up smoking.
I have given up smoking. Keith Olbermann, the highest rated host on MSNBC, announced abruptly on the air on Friday night that he's leaving Countdown with Keith Olbermann immediately. Now, the reason why this is big news is because Keith Olbermann was the mainstay, the anchor, so it would seem, for MSNBC in its gradual... It's very, very gradual. It's at times incremental, but nonetheless, seemingly inexorable rise through the ranks of cable television news channels. MSNBC went from being sort of a curiosity to, I would say, a quasi-formidable presence. It certainly is for CNN. They're taking CNN down now pretty regularly.
Yeah, they get better ratings on Cooper, Anderson, and everybody.
Anderson Cooper.
Well...
No, Anderson Cooper.
It's Anderson Cooper.
I got to double check it.
Okay, you double check that, man. Why don't I just double check to see if your name is Dickman Budd, okay?
No, you said it was Cooper Anderson.
One time I made that mistake. In any event, the host, who had a stormy relationship with the management of the network for some time, especially since he was suspended for 2 days last November, came to an agreement with NBC's corporate management late this week to settle his contract and to step down. In a closing statement on his show, Mr. Olbermann said simply that it would be the last edition of the program. He offered no explanation other than on occasion the show had become too much for him. Well, now let me tell you what the speculation was, and let me tell you what really happened, because this happens to be an area of particular strength for this radio show, when we can analyze a news story better than others, and we just do. You know, we got some brain surgeons out there, man, that make all kinds of money, and they couldn't figure out whether the sun's up, whether the sun's down. They couldn't interpret whether George Clooney has a beard, whether he's clean shaven. It's a mystery. Now, Keith Olbermann had been the subject of all kinds of conversation following a November 4th suspension because of this terrible crime that he committed, which was to contribute money to a campaign. And to hear all of these guys at the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal tell it today, oh, well, gosh, I mean, that was about as bad as it gets. That's why he got fired, because he became even more of a loose cannon, because they couldn't control him, because he was this and because he was that. Now, it's amazing to me that media critics and television writers can be in the business as long as they have been, and they still get suckered and fooled with the same horse dung. They still think it's about whether a guy is a loose cannon or not. They still think it's about that. They still think it's about whether the guy is towing the editorial line. They still believe this. Keith Olbermann, and I'm going to cut right to the chase for you folks. Keith Olbermann was fired, and he was fired. And I don't say that with any particular relish, because I've been fired too. And it's the most, it's not only is it humiliating, it is as depressing as it gets. And you think you're the most worthless thing on earth. And that's exactly how Keith Olbermann's feeling tonight. Now, yes, he's making $7 million a year. But still in all, you know.
Yeah, well, that's got to make you feel better.
I don't know. I'd probably be very depressed as I sat there and drank out of a coconut with a straw. What am I saying?
What are you talking about, man?
Well, you're right. But in any event, Olbermann got fired. And here's why he got fired. Because he was no longer an asset to that company. It had nothing to do with whether he was throwing a temper tantrum or not. It had nothing to do with whether or not Comcast came in and said, well, we're a button down. I'm listening to these guys tonight. I can't, you know, it's funny to me, you know.
Like that guy that Bill Carter said that Comcast's not going to put up with a guy like that.
Yeah, Bill Carter, who wrote a really great book about The Tonight Show. Bill Carter, who's a... I like reading Bill Carter, but he like all these other guys, they had Schuster on. They had on... Who the hell else did they have on there?
Oh, they had Roland Martin.
Roland Martin couldn't find it with both hands. They had a lot of guys that were saying, in a sense, the same thing. Yeah, the guy's a real loose cannon. Yeah, he really pissed him off. Yeah, you know, they can't put up with that. No, 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 no. So then I brought up during our pre-show the ultimate example. Charlie Sheen. Anybody ever heard of him?
Yeah.
He's on 2 and a Half Men. The guy's a drug addict, an alcoholic. He smacks women around. And the guy is, he ain't been fired any time I checked. Why hasn't he been fired?
Because the show's a hit.
Because the show's a hit. Charlie Sheen going to be employed by CBS as long as that show's a hit, unless he kills himself for as long as that show's on the air. And Keith Olbermann would be at MSNBC to this day, no matter how much of a pain in the ass, how much of a this and a that, how many times he contributed, a big deal. You'd swear to God that what he did was tantamount to a war crime. He violated something in the company handbook. You listen to these clowns talk about it, you'd think the guy broke 15 different kinds of federal law. It was something in the company handbook that he ran afoul of. There's no, didn't violate New York state law. Keith Olbermann would be with MSNBC to this day as we speak, were he still an asset to that company, but he's not. And what does that mean? It means, as Schuster pointed out, his ratings had peaked. His revenue, the advertising, had peaked. He wasn't going to make any more money. In point of fact, Keith Olbermann was probably going to start to erode it in terms of audience and advertiser. Now, yeah, he had a really strong 12-plus number. That's all people ages 12 years and older. But the money demo is 25-54. And in that demo, he was being beaten, not regularly, but he was being beaten on a, you know, a significant number of times by Rachel Maddow. His presentation, given the fact that he wasn't really going to be making much more money, he isn't going to be getting many more people in terms of viewers. In other words, his upside was gone, man. And his presentation was nothing that they wanted to carry them into the future. They want more of the Rachel Maddow approach, more of that sort of bookish Lawrence O'Donnell approach, more of that kind of earnest newsman Ed Schultz approach, not this sort of on-the-edge, wacky, brilliant thing that Olbermann does. They don't want that. And he's not making enough money to make it worth their while to get into an argument with him every night. If he was making that kind of bread for them, they'd get into arguments with him. They'd buy him his own pen. They'd do anything they could to make him happy. Believe you me. And again, take a look at Charlie Sheen. And there have been other examples. When somebody is a significant asset to any company, whether it is in entertainment or not, they'll bend over backwards to try to make you happy, especially in the entertainment field. And that's exactly what cable news is. Don't kid yourself. Well, it's journalism, Phil. Journalism?
You don't think they're... Journalists are going to go look at a story.
They're going to go look at a story, huh? That sounds. I'm going to go to the zoo and look at a monkey.
What's that mean?
Yeah, that means about as much as what he said. They're going to go look at a story. Those guys are covering a story about as good as that tarp covered my car, man. You know I got to go get a new one, that cheap car cover you guys brought back.
That's the biggest one they had.
Well, it ain't big enough. The point that I'm trying to make here is they're completely off base, and we just gave you the reason. It's cold, and it hurts. I mean, but and you know what? They did a favor. They did him a favor by saying, you know, Keith is gone, and they didn't elaborate. Because if they elaborated, it would have been very, very embarrassing for him. Because this is what they would have said. They would have said Keith Olbermann is gone because, frankly, Keith can no longer get it done for us. He cannot earn. He cannot really pull the audience that we need. He's over. And instead, they said thanks very much and goodbye. And the and New York Times, Wall Street Journal, the rest of those guys are so stupid. Thank God for that, because they're saying essentially, you know, Keith is kind of a loose cannon and he's kind of a hard ass, and you know they don't want to deal with that. And Comcast, oh my, no. All right, so here we have Keith Olbermann now, and let's play a little bit of this. This is him at the end of his broadcast last night on MSNBC.
To the nexus of politics and terror, to the first special comment, the program grew and grew thanks entirely to your support, with great rewards for me, and I hope for you too. There were many occasions, particularly in the last 2.5 years, where all that surrounded the show, but never the show itself, was just too much for me. But your support and loyalty, if I may use the word insistence, ultimately required that I keep going. This may be the only television program wherein the host was much more in awe of the audience than vice versa.
Thank you. So, that was weird. Why didn't we play the whole thing?
I don't know.
MSNBC announced that Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell would replace Countdown at 8 p.m. That'll be exciting. Lawrence O'Donnell, he's a thrill a minute, that guy. And then Ed Schultz, who not more than, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago was screaming and crying about how he wasn't getting no love. Well, guess what? They just canned Olbermann, and you still got a gig, Ed. He didn't think he was getting, remember all that stuff?
Yeah, he was crying about how they're giving him promo time and everything like that.
I hope you ain't crying now, Ed. Ed Schultz it will be taking Mr. O'Donnell's slot at 10 p.m. Mr. Olbermann did not discuss any future plans, but NBC executive said one term of his settlement will keep him from moving to another network for an extended period of time. One term of his settlement. Well, let me explain something. This is the most asinine written thing. First of all, if the guy got a deal through 2012, his deal is through 2012. So he's got another year and a half, let's call it. So they're going to pay him for another year and a half. So he's still getting paid for a year and a half. So he ain't going nowhere in terms of his employee. He works for MSNBC. He's off the air. He's getting his money. He's going to keep his mouth shut. And plus, they relieved him of his duties with this in mind. We don't have to worry about Keith popping up on another network for another year and a half while we get our ducks in a row here. I mean, it's a move that that networks make all the time. So Keith Olbermann, a guy that drove people ape, the guy that we called Oberfuhrer, is no more. 877-876-7445. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we'll be right back.
You're so dumb.
Thank you.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And they have blue and they have a green.
They have blue and green what?
Talking about, like, the Neil Pierce Morgan show?
Yeah. They're talking right now to George Clooney, and he's green, and there's green squares and blue. Everything's floating around. I don't think it'll work.
What do you mean there's green squares and blue? Describe to me what you're looking at.
I'm looking at George Clooney, and there's blue squares floating everywhere. And another thing, Pierce Morgan, you can't even see him. And then he showed his Twitter page.
Pierce Morgan, you can't even see him, and he showed his Twitter page.
Well, he's not on camera right now. But it's Twitter, Pierce Morgan, and George Clooney, and I still got a floating green thing.
What do you mean, floating green thing, man?
Look, there it is.
Oh, that's the set. I don't know what that is. That's the set. Who's that guy sitting with him?
I don't know, man.
Anyway, we're looking at the Pierce Morgan show, and that's another show that looks like it's tanking. I'm kidding. I think he's going to do fine. I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. It far be it from me. I don't know why these guys decide the things they decide. Why'd they decide on this guy? You know? Who knows? Who knows? All right. Who are they going to put in there, by the way, for what's his name? They're going to put in...
They put Lawrence O'Donnell.
Lawrence O'Donnell, yeah. All right. Well, I think Oberfuhrer, if you want to know where I think he should go, I think that CNN ought to take a shot on him. I'm serious. I also said, and people will think I'm kidding, but I'm not, I think that it would be It might be one of the greatest moves that Fox ever made, putting him on the air.
Are you kidding me, man?
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Putting Keith Olbermann on Fox. How would that mess people up? I mean, are you kidding? People would say, wait a minute. Maybe they'd think it was a stunt. All right, an online store called Jesus Hates Obama says a television ad it submitted to air during next weekend's Super Bowl has been rejected by the Fox television network. Now, the 30-second ad set to the tune of the Civil War era Battle Hymn of the Republic shows bobble-headed versions of Obama and Jesus with a scornful look on Jesus' face. The camera zooms in on Jesus, and just like that, Obama falls into a fishbowl waiting below. Jesus, suddenly sporting a Jesus Hates Obama t-shirt, looks pleased. Says the guy who runs this website, Richard Belfry, as in Bats In, do I really believe that Jesus really hates Obama? No, but I do believe in freedom, as in the freedom to poke fun at the Obama administration when I don't agree with their policies, said Richard, who began selling Jesus Hates Obama merchandise in 2009 in a Thursday press release about the ad's rejection. A spokesman for Fox, which will broadcast the Super Bowl on February the 6th, would not say whether the network rejected the ad. However, this guy thinks they have.
Maybe they got a letter from him or something.
Maybe they did. Maybe he said, you know, what about it? And they said, oh, you know, we're not going to put that. But they didn't, you know, they're not releasing a press release on every ad they reject. If an advertiser wishes to submit an ad for consideration, we will review it and determine if it's appropriate for air, said Lou Dermilo, a spokesman for Fox Sports Media Group. However, we do not provide information about the materials that may or may not have been submitted, nor do we discuss our broadcast standard policies. We just wipe with it and throw it away. Then...
You see that?
What do you think, man?
What do you think? You're kidding.
Yay! The Jesus Hates Obama website said in its release that it had received an email message from Fox's vice president for broadcast standards and practices that said its commercial was deemed not acceptable, it wasn't funny, it was insulting, and why do they want to put your stupid ass ad on in the middle of the Super Bowl when everyone's trying to party and have a good time and be friends for about 5 seconds in the middle of a Sunday afternoon? Thank you and good luck. Belfry, who describes himself as a real a-hole, no, he says he's a conservative comedian. He describes himself as a conservative comedian, not unlike Snoop Dogg. And he said in a press release that he won financial backing from private investors to produce and air a commercial during the Super Bowl when 30-second spot costs spiraled up to $3 million. Now, how are those private investors going to feel, Mr. Belfry, now that you can't provide them with a commercial, hmm? Well, No. You haven't answered. What are they going to say? Because we've got some very, very important people in New York that you've made to look very foolish, sir. Well, I want, no. My investors are very anxious to know your answer because these are very important men and they can't have their time wasted, sir. Hmm? You want to go out and see my horse? Yes, I wouldn't mind to. Anyway, Belfry said he has sold over 70,000 Jesus Hates Obama t-shirts out of the back of his van through word of mouth and selling them to school kids in alleyways. In November, he launched JesusHatesObama.com. Well, you're just making yourself a whole bunch of dough there on Jesus and Obama, aren't you? The day that Jesus and Obama were born, Mr. Belfry, was the best day of your life. Well, you're making yourself some t-shirts and you got a website and you have investors who are going to give you a spot and, you know... The website lists a Las Vegas, Nevada address on its Contact Us page. He said he submitted the No Frills ad, which features bobble-headed dolls of Jesus Christ and Barack Obama, in November and January and was rejected both times. Ad space for the Super Bowl sold out in November. The ad encouraged viewers to go to the JesusHatesObama.com site to buy merchandise, mostly t-shirts with messages including Jesus loves you but hates Obama. Mm. So that's great, man. So let's put that ad on in the middle of the Super Bowl and everyone's at their throats by the time they kick off for the second half. No, I don't think so, Mr. Belfry. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. A little Oklahoma boy makes a gun gesture with his hand and, well, gun control.
Phil Hendry. This is the
world-famous Bill Hendry Show.
You know, earlier we had Stephen Bozell on the show. We've had Mr. Bozell on a couple of times. Tonight he was saying that he's suing Skins, the MTV show, because that show has made him attracted to 15-year-old girls and has morally depraved him. And so he's suing MTV for, like, emotional damages, right?
Right.
And Mr. Bozell gets involved in these lawsuits. At one point, G. Gordon Liddy, no less a personage than G. Gordon Liddy, you know who he is, got a hold of a list of Steve Bozell lawsuits and read them out on his show. It took up a whole segment. And I think for Mr. Liddy, that's probably the way he preps his show. So, you know.
Yeah, that helped him burn up 15 good minutes.
Right. So we're very happy to do that for you, sir. However, this story that we're going to tell you about in a minute is Steve Bozell, I mean, down to the last period, man. This is Steve Bozell, and it ain't Steve Bozell. It's some other guy by the name of Hubert. Hubert Blackman. But first this, Oklahoma first grade boy makes gun gesture with finger, gets suspended. We've all done that. We've all gone pow with our finger, right? He gets suspended because he made the gun gesture. Here he is on this little video clip. There's a still of it at the top of this story, and he's making a little gun gesture with microphones in front of him. You'd swear to God this guy is standing there. He's been elected the Secretary General of the UN with all these microphones as he's going, here's my finger, pow. Middell parent Lydia Fox said Tuesday her 7-year-old son was suspended Friday for fidgeting in class. This is KFOR-TV Oklahoma City reporting. Fox said her son, Patrick Riley, who is in first grade at Parkview Elementary, was asked to go home after he formed a gun with his hand and started to pretend he was shooting at a wall. School leaders said Riley was misbehaving during the assembly. Him and a little girl were just getting bored at an assembly and doing some target practice, Fox said. Parkview Elementary said an official statement that a student has repeatedly used his hand to simulate a gun and act as if he's shooting fellow students. Oh, God. This is so depressing. So depressing.
Well, just take it easy. It's going to be...
Don't put your hand on my shoulder, man.
What's going on? You're all depressed.
Well, I'm not going to blow my brains out. Thank you.
Just want you to be okay here. Have a...
But don't feed me water like I'm in the hospital. I'm just saying. Can you believe where we are? Kid with the pow, and we got to take... And he's going to go to the... Whoa, ho, ho, ho. You know, what do they call it? Zero tolerance. But, I mean, there comes a point. I encountered this. I'm telling you. I think I told you guys the story. I encountered this on Facebook one fine day. You know, we're over there at facebook.com/Phil Hendry. And anyway.
Nice plug.
Thank you. And I said something about a gun, a toy gun, and it was one female after the next. Young mothers checking in as if what they were saying was right straight out of the manual for living. Oh, well, that's ridiculous. You never, ever. Guns, children, you'd have sworn I had said something like looking at little girls is a real treat, you know, and I've got pictures at home. Do you want to see them? Something like that. And I thought, oh, my God. I really sometimes I fake myself out because I think we've gotten smarter, you know.
Yeah, what do you mean smarter?
I mean, I really think that sometimes we've gotten smarter, and I think we have, but in the situation with guns, it's still we're still real stupid when it comes real stupid, man. Real stupid. Here's this kid with the simulating shooting with his finger. And so they sent him home. Why is that? Because they don't want him to go home and get his father's gun and come to school with a bag of weapons and hand grenades and begin to spray the place with bullets and explosives like they did at Columbine. They don't want to have that, so they don't want the kid making the finger motion. Now, if any of these educators, and here's the thing that this is shocking to me, okay?
You said by Columbine.
Right. No, these are educated people, these educators. These are people who are teachers. They are administrators. It is their job to stay up on the latest, the state-of-the-art information concerning young people, violence, whether we're talking about biochemical imbalances, is it having to do with the medicine they're receiving. If I were a teacher today, I would be attending every seminar, every conference I could possibly attend just to educate myself on what's the latest and what's the state-of-the-art information. And you'd think that these women would know and these men would know that Columbine wasn't about guns. It was never about guns. It was about explosives. They wanted to blow the school up and kill thousands. Now, that has been a stated fact for over 10 years. Anyway, one of the things I've always felt, I've always been able to brag about in Oklahoma is that common sense still rules here. Unfortunately, I don't think I can say that anymore, said Mrs. Fox, the mother of this little boy. She met with the school principal on Tuesday. She said they decided to agree to disagree on the matter, and the in-school suspension was not overturned. Fox was warned that if the incident reoccurs, her son would face a long-term suspension because he made the gun thing with the finger, and the whole media came out there. Now, here's the guy that I said reminds me of Steve Bozell. Wait till you hear this story, because this'll really wilt your permanent. A tourist says he was traumatized when Las Vegas police threatened to arrest him after he complained about an act of prostitution in his hotel room.
That's illegal, too.
Prostitution's illegal, but he still went to the police to complain about the prostitution that he had purchased. His name is Hubert Blackman of New York City. And he filed a lawsuit this month against a Las Vegas company that he identified as Las Vegas Exclusive Personals. The lawsuit says the business operates on Paradise Road. Blackman, a college student, so he says, said in an interview on Thursday that he was on vacation and staying at the Stratosphere on December the 17th when he called Las Vegas Exclusive Personals to arrange for a stripper to come to his room and dance for him.
Now, where was he at?
He was at the Stratosphere.
All right.
Why do you get what's
that? What difference does that make?
I just want to make sure I knew where he was.
At the Stratosphere.
Yeah.
Blackman said the woman, who appeared to be in her mid-20s, stripped and performed a lap dance for $155 and a sex act for another $120.
All right, break that down again.
What are you talking about, bud?
What do you want?
She did what?
She stripped.
All right. Then what?
Will you get out of here with then what? She stripped, she performed a lap dance and a sex act. He said that the next morning he called Las Vegas Exclusive Personals to demand his money back, saying he was dissatisfied because the entertainer didn't stay for the promised 1 hour and left after a half hour, probably because she was so creeped out by you, Hubert. Blackman said he also told the company he was incapable of making an informed agreement with the stripper because he was drunk. Now, I'm telling you, this guy's got to be putting me on now. Dissatisfied when Las Vegas Exclusive Personals didn't arrange for a refund, Blackman said he contacted Metro Police and was told he faced arrest for such conduct and was advised to contact the Better Business Bureau. Now it sounds like the Vegas police are getting in on it.
Oh, this guy, he hired a prostitute, and now he's calling up the cops and saying that she left after a half hour and he's going to sue him.
Yes.
And he said he's drunk so he couldn't make a decision?
Exactly. That's why I think the guy's a joke. Blackman said he now needs medical treatment for a mental condition related to the incident. In the suit, which he filed without an attorney, this is what we used to call life imitates Phil. Because I swear to you, this has got to be a Steve Bozell bit. In the suit, which he filed without an attorney, Blackman said, quote, I would like the court to close the business. I also would like to get my $275 payment and a $1.8 million verdict for the tragic event that happened. In the interview, Blackman said it was the dancer who solicited the sex act, but he acknowledged he was aware of the time prostitution's illegal. The number listed in Blackman's lawsuit is used by Hillsboro Enterprises, which says it's been licensed for 17 years and provides adult dancers on a subcontractor outcall basis, and blah, 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 blah. So this jackball is suing because now he's mentally infirmed because of the emotional strain that it's been. She left after a half hour instead of staying the full hour. He was too drunk to make an informed business decision, so he got ripped off that way. He wants his money back plus $1.8 million. And the cops didn't do anything, even though it was illegal what he was doing. So, Mr. Blackman, I think you are a shoo-in for at least half that amount of money.
You think I'm going to win that?
I doubt it, man. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. And our website, philhenryshow.com, where you can get yourself right now live streaming video of the show as well as all of our archives. PhilHenryShow.com. Where are we going now, man? A pain in the ass pays for his college tuition in dollar bills. Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
the world famous, going places where the talk show can't go, man.
Yeah. You gotta read this one thing he said, though.
Olbermann?
Yeah.
Well, it's not what he said. I mean, well, yeah, he did. Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, that's your favorite movie.
That ain't my favorite movie. That was Neil Rogers' favorite movie. It was a lot of people's favorite movies. In fact, Olbermann, when he was leaving, quoted the film or made reference to the film Network. Now, a lot of you have heard of this movie. Many of you are too young to have remembered it when it came out in the theaters, and you probably have never seen it. But this film predicts the future of television that was made in 1976. In 1976, a guy by the name of Paddy Chayefsky, who had written Marty, he'd written The Hospital. You look up Paddy Chayefsky's name, P-A-D-D-Y. This dude was a brilliant television and motion picture writer. And he wrote the script to Network. Now, this was a movie. It came out in 1976. It starred the late, what was the guy's name? Peter Finch. He was an Australian actor who plays a down at the heels, watching his career sort of just spin away, news anchor in America. A guy by the name of Howard Beale, and he's on a fictitious fourth network called UBS. And Howard Beale is divorced. He's not making a lot of money. He's about to get fired because his newscast sucks, and the other big three networks are kicking his ass, and he just, you know. And so one night on the newscast, he says, "You know what? I just got tired of the bull bleep." He says it on the air. It goes out over the air. "I got tired of the bull bleep." And, I mean, they say, "Go to black, and you're fired, Howard, and how dare you," and this and that and this and that. He says, "I'm really, really sorry." And they say, "All right, come back. You're fired, but we'll let you go out on your terms." He said, "Thank you very much." So he goes back out, and he does it even more. In fact, he goes into this pitch that is so obscene that they just basically kick his ass out of the studio. But there's this one programmer. She's in the entertainment division, and she watches this guy as he goes off talking all kinds of stuff about, you know, F this and F that and stick it up your, you know, and this guy's on the air. And it's played by Faye Dunaway, and she says, "You know what? I don't know if you guys saw the ratings, but the numbers for your newscast is going up." And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" He said, "Let me take over this show." Meanwhile, there's a very famous scene you've all heard about. I won't bore you with the rest of the movie, but there's a very famous scene where he is now mad. Howard Beale has gone mad. He's insane. He's laying in a bed in his friend's apartment, played by William Holden. This is his friend, a guy he goes back years and years with, and he gets out of bed. He's been told by God, or so you think, because he's talking to a disembodied nothing. And he gets into his raincoat, and in his stocking feet, he walks in his raincoat and his underwear all the way down to the television station and walks onto the set of the news just in time for the news and begins this speech about being mad as hell and not wanting to take it anymore. And he tells everybody to go to your window and scream out the window, "I'm mad as hell and I don't want to take it anymore." And this was in the context of 1970s America. Crime was out of control. Violence of every kind was out of control. The economy, you think it's bad now? It was, well, it's bad now. But back then it was bad, too. Double-digit unemployment, double-digit inflation, double-digit interest rates. The country, New York City was broke. The country was in bad shape. And not only that, we didn't feel too good about ourselves. We were coming out of Vietnam and Watergate. And so here is this Howard Beale and this film network of this guy saying to everyone, "Go to the window and scream, I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore." And it becomes a very cathartic thing, and he becomes number one. His newscast goes to number one. Suddenly this guy's about to be fired, goes to number one. Make a long story short, this whole movie predicts what happens over the next 35 years in television. I mean, right down to it, man, predicts it. Now, understand, that's kind of an achievement, because one of the things that mankind is notoriously bad at is predicting his own future. We are terrible at predicting our own future. We haven't got a clue what's going to happen in 10 years. I mean, look at some of the stuff. By now, shouldn't we have been on Mars or something?
Now, by now, we should have been on a moon. You know,
we are on a moon, but I mean,
yeah, we should have been on the moon, but we should have had a monkey. Or what was a monkey?
There wasn't no monkey.
There wasn't any monkey. You mean the monolith?
Yeah, we should have discovered a monolith that would take us to Saturn.
Yeah, by now we should have discovered the big monolith that would take us to Saturn. Absolutely. By now we should be in Mars. You know, 2010, wasn't that the Roy Scheider? So, you know, we don't know anything. But this movie, Network, predicts television right down to the last exploitive, ridiculous, asinine script. You wouldn't believe it unless you see it. And if you watch it, you'll enjoy it. I guarantee you'll enjoy it. And everybody's great in it. And it is. And the guy who steals the show is Ned Beatty, who owns the network. And he realizes this guy, Howard Beale, is a little bit out of control because Howard Beale is bringing up some things on his newscast that this head of the network doesn't want him to bring up. So he comes into town and he brings Howard Beale into this large conference room because he realizes he's dealing with a madman. And he realizes he's dealing with a madman who believes he's talking to God. So what does this guy played by Beatty, what does he do? He pretends he's God, or the voice of God. He brings Howard Beale into a long, conference room, turns the lights down, puts a light underneath his own chin so it's shining up so he looks like the face of evil personified, and he begins to just preach to him, saying, "You have meddled in the affairs of God," you know, and has this guy Beale convinced he needs to do this and that and something else. So it predicts television right on down to the Keith Obermans, I'm telling you. And Oberman makes reference to it in his goodbye tonight when he says, "I wish I could have gone out the way Howard Beale went out, telling everybody, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." He says, "But reality is different." Well, it ain't that different.
It's not different. Take 30 years to get to it, though.
Well, that's true. Swastika hung in neighborhood feud. Man wants to prevent neighbor from renting home. Residents in one Sacramento neighborhood are outraged that a man has hung a large swastika in his front window. What the hell? Joe Ungaro lives on U Street in Midtown Sacramento. He said he's flying the flag because he doesn't like his next-door neighbors, and he hopes to prevent them from renting their home. He doesn't like his next-door neighbors, and he doesn't want them to rent their home. Do you not want them to rent their home so they stay there? I don't know. Anyway, Ungaro said his inspiration came from a scene in the movie Step Brothers. Here I was just talking about network, and this is some highbrow stuff. Step Brothers. In the movie, two Step Brothers pose as a Nazi and a Ku Klux Klan member to sabotage their parents' attempts to sell their home. It's been going on for so long, it just feels rotten, said Jolaine Davis. Davis owns the home listed for rent. She and her family moved out only after she said Ungaro terrorized them for years. Both Ungaro and the Davises agree the problem started when the Davises remodeled their home. So it's some situation, a pain-in-the-ass neighbor. He's got a problem with another pain-in-the-ass neighbor. And this is how adults solve their problems. Isn't that fantastic? Here is a neighbor talking to KCRA-TV about the swastika.
I'm horrified. I mean, it's a sign of hate. I don't think here in Midtown anyone is happy with it. Everybody is concerned and upset.
Whatever. All right, so, it's another non-story. But nonetheless, the fact is that this guy's got a swastika. I should have kept on talking about network. Anyway, this story is not unlike what happens on network. I think that somebody hangs a swastika just to see, I know what happens. They kill a guy to see if it affects the ratings. And then finally, no, bud, no.
Why not?
No oral sex stories about second graders. Finally, a student with tuition increases in Britain prompting violent protests. Rising college fees rarely elicit more than a shrug among U.S. students, but on Friday, a sophomore at the University of Colorado found a symbolic way to strike back. The student, Nick Ramos, paid his entire spring semester bill, all $14,000 of it, using dollar bills, a 50-cent piece, and a penny. But when I thought about it more, he said, it started out as a joke, but when I thought about it more, it's just an absurd amount of money. All right, well, good for you, man. I'm glad the week's ending, man, because we got no freaking news.
What about Roger Ebert?
No, I don't care about Roger Ebert. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Roger Ebert, that story's never going to be done on this show. You know, I'm not interested. You know, he used to be great, and it isn't because he doesn't have a jaw that works. It's just he sucks.
Probably not too good without that jaw.
Our show is produced by Jason Rantz, technical director, Rick Johnson, and our associate producer, Dan Northcraft, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.